Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, speech language pathologist, and I'd like to welcome you to our show tonight.
Hi, Ms. Laura. This is Kate Hensler. I am a developmental interventionist, and I work with 0 to 3-year-old kids for the First Steps program in Kentucky.
And we are so glad you're joining us tonight. It's Thursday, April 23rd. Is that right?
23rd, yeah.
I typed it all day. I don't know why I've gone blank about that. But if you're listening now, you're listening live, and we would love to have you call us tonight at 1-718-766-4332 with any questions you might have about your toddler's language development. And tonight we're continuing with the same topic that we started several weeks ago. It's helping your child who might have difficulty understanding language learn how to comprehend and follow directions. And tonight we're mostly going to be talking about a big problem that children with receptive language issues have, and that's learning to answer questions and learning to ask questions. And so often we find with these children who are late talkers and who parents just think about it as solely an expressive problem where they can't say what they mean, so many times there's an underlying receptive problem or also a problem understanding language. And so often when children get to be about 2 or 2.5, they might have learned to say some words and certainly are following very basic directions, but then when you get to the point that they should be understanding more complex things, how to respond to questions, how to follow more complex, maybe multiple step directions, that's when we really start to see receptive language problems rear their ugly heads when those kids can't follow through with the kinds of things that we're expecting them to do and things that their own little peers or other children their age are able to do. So that's one thing we're going to talk about tonight is how to help your late-talking or language-delayed toddler learn how to understand, to respond to questions, and then how to ask questions too. Okay. Kate, feel free to jump in anytime you want to. Otherwise, I'm just going to blab on about this.
Go right ahead. I'm right here with you.
Okay, let's talk about review for just a minute what we started talking about last week. These would be characteristics of children who have receptive language delays that have difficulty understanding and processing questions. And I use the terms understanding and processing kind of interchangeably. Some speech pathologists might make a real distinction between that, meaning that understanding language would refer or would mean children who really have comprehension problems, and then processing would be children who might understand the vocabulary. They just, when you put it all together in a long command, they may have difficulty kind of processing or making sense out of that because it's so much language at one time. Kate, do you make a distinction between that? I don't think you probably do with our kids as young as they are, since
no.
We work basically with toddlers.
Me,
yeah.
I really just use it kind of interchangeably and generally to mean, in my terms, like I'm pitching and they're not catching.
Right.
You know, I'm
yeah.
saying it and it is kind of strange when I'm using terminology that I've heard them use. I'm, you know what I mean? When I'm presenting
right.
something that they appear to be somewhat familiar with or even very familiar with, but because I'm the one presenting it and they're not, they still aren't really with me. And
right.
I would call
and
that processing. But
yeah, me too. And that's how I mostly refer to it. Like I evaluated a little boy this week who's turning 3 in May, so oh my goodness, a very late referral to our program, and he goes to a wonderful preschool program or daycare program here in Louisville. And he is talking some and some short phrases, but of course we know by a child turning 3 should be using longer sentences, but you know, so he's delayed but not that delayed. when you look at him expressively, but oh my goodness, receptively, he understands lots of different words, but to try to follow directions and, again, to process what his teachers have said or what his parents have said, he completely breaks down. He can barely do, he can do simple things like what's that or where's the ball, but to try to follow a two-step command or certainly in the context of the classroom, try to understand things like, no, we're not going to decorate the cookie right now. First, you're going to lay down and take a nap, and then when you wake up, and then after we have snack, then we're going to decorate the cookie. And that's what I walked in on this week when I went to evaluate him, is he had been just having a full-blown meltdown because he didn't understand when they were going to get to decorate the cookie that they made before lunch. And the teachers were saying, we told him. We told him, now we're making him sit here in this chair because he's not listening to us. He's just acting bad. He's just having a fit. But that was way too much language for him to understand. And so my job over the next, 2 weeks maybe, is to help those teachers really understand that it's not some of the things that they're labeling as bad behavior really is because he doesn't understand and is not processing higher level language or more complex language. And I think that happens all the time, and we've talked about this too, Kate. So many kids with receptive language problems aren't identified, and parents, and especially those, our daycare workers and our preschool teachers, really don't understand that they're not just being bad. They truly don't have a clue sometimes what you're saying to them. So how can we expect them to understand directions and follow the routines when they don't understand what the words even mean or can't even put them together so that it makes sense? And so many times teachers and parents, or especially parents, I think would rather label a kid as bad than really kind of understand that it's a lot more than that. There's an underlying problem there.
Right, and I can see why a child who is talking some, you know, it would be easy to assume, because typically developing kids do at that age understand more than they can say. And if they're talking, it would be reasonable to assume. And, you know, even a good daycare, probably they're not evaluating the kids. Probably they don't get that much one-on-one with the kids, you know.
Right.
They might do a good job as a group, but they don't really sit and really see what that individual child can do. So if they're talking, it'd be kind of natural to assume, oh, he knows what I'm talking about. He just said something related to that. And it's like, eh.
Right. That little boy kept crying and saying, cookie, I want my cookie. Where's cookie? Want cookie. Oh. And they kept trying to say, we can't do it yet. First you have to take a nap. And then when he woke up from nap, cookie, where's cookie? And they said, you know, we have to go potty. We have to eat our snack. Then we can decorate the cookie. I don't think he was excited about decorating it. I think he wanted to eat it. But that's kind of a whole little side note there. But, you know, not only he probably, you know, and he has a low frustration tolerance anyway. Things set him off pretty easily. Probably even if he does understand what they're talking about, but certainly using all those words and then that whole delayed gratification concept, you know, I'm almost 43 and have a hard time with that sometimes, with waiting and waiting and waiting. So, but that I thought about him when I was preparing for the show tonight, because he is a kid that looks like he would be understanding, and he does. You know, you can ask him to point to, you know, where's the baby? Where's the ball? You know, when I'm doing that kind of testing with him, but then you make it just a little bit harder, like who's sleeping or show me who's running. And boy, that's where he started to break down. Or, you know, we got to the page about object function. Show me which one goes on your feet. Mm-hmm. Show me which one you ride. He couldn't do any of that. Mm-hmm. So again, I think without looking at that and seeing that example, I think it would be really easy just to assume that he's, you know, a bad kid and doesn't want to listen and doesn't want to obey, rather than, gosh, there's a real receptive language problem going on here. Okay.
Laura, I'm going to interrupt you briefly. My phone is clicking kind of funny. I'm going to plug in the corded phone. So if you lose me, you might need to have, you know, push the button that lets me on or something like that.
Okay. That sounds good. Well, I'm going to go ahead and review while you're doing that what I started to talk about 5 minutes ago, the characteristics of children who have receptive language delays and difficulty learning to answer questions. Common problems might include repeating the last few words of the question or repeating the whole question rather than answering that. It might be when a child answers incorrectly, such as shaking his head yes or no when you ask them a question, you know, that's not a yes or no question. You know, what did you do today? And they start shaking their head yes rather than answering, you know, played outside or painted or played with Play-Doh. It might also be giving an off-target response, such as when you ask them, what's your name? They might say, two. Or, you ask them, what did you do at school today? And they might say, you know, something just totally off the wall that, you know, gosh, he did not understand what I meant then. And it might also be not responding to a question or ignoring a question. And sometimes children like that are missed because we just think that they are choosing to ignore us or choosing not to respond when the real problem is they don't understand what you've asked them. Okay, and so last week we talked about, let's see, I need to let Kate back on right now. Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Hopefully so last week we talked about the first kinds of questions that children learn to answer. And the very first kinds of things are making choices, so that if you ask them, you know, do you want milk or juice, they're generally able to look at one or point to one or even say milk and make that kind of choice. So that would be an early kind of question that a child would learn to understand. And Kate and I last week gave lots of examples and talked about how perplexing it is to us when a kid doesn't understand how to make a choice. And again, it's so odd for us when we see children that are two and a half, close to three, and still then they may even be talking some, but again, because like Kate pointed out a few minutes ago, we just kind of assume that because when they're saying the word that they're automatically understanding it, but then we turn it around and ask them a question and they're not necessarily able to make a choice or respond with this, maybe even a word that they just said 30 seconds ago. So that's always interesting. So that's one of the first kinds of questions that children learn to answer, making choices. And again, I think that's probably one of the first things that I think about working on when I realize that a child is having some receptive language problems or that's just kind of a foundational skill when you start to think about helping your child learn how to answer questions. Another early kind of question that children learn how to do is when asked a simple where's question, they may not answer with a word, but they certainly use a gesture or their eyes to answer the question. So you might say, where's daddy? And a child might look around the room and then radar lock his eyes on his dad and light up, and then you know, he knew that. He didn't say, daddy's in the chair, but he looked in the direction of his dad, and he certainly answered you with a nonverbal gesture there by looking at dad. So that's something that we want children to be able to do. And again, the age ranges that I have on this, doing that kind of skill would be less than 1 year, or certainly by 12 months. We want children able to do that, to look in the appropriate place when asked a simple question, as long as it's a familiar object or person that we're asking about. Another kind of where question that we do with young children, maybe I would say certainly between the 12-month and 18-month level, is start to ask them about where familiar pictures are. So they're looking at a book, and you might say, where's the ball? And they start to point to the picture and can indicate that they understand the question by their pointing to the right object. And you can even do that with objects, too. And I certainly, you know, that's something we do all the time when we're checking a child's receptive language skills. You know, and I often will ask a mom what's something that he absolutely loves that might be in the other room. And she'll tell me, you know, he loves Thomas. He loves his ball. He loves, Elmo. And I'll ask him, you know, where's Elmo? Where's Elmo? Go get your Elmo. And we'll see if he can leave the room and go retrieve that item and come back. Sometimes kids can't do that, especially when Kate and I first start to get to see them, those children with language delays, so we kind of have to help walk them through that process. If they can't do a command like that, I break it way down, and I'll put you know, it might ask about something that's just right across the room. And if that's too difficult, then we're going to back it up another step and maybe have a group of items on the floor within their line of vision and say, you know, where's your choo-choo? And then if he still can't do it with that, then I might hold the two items in my hand and ask him, where's choo-choo? And I have had tons of kids that can't even do it at that level. Haven't you, Kate, where you've got two things kind of right in front of them? So then what you're going to do to work on that is take their little hands. When you say, where's choo-choo, you know, you're holding maybe the items in one hand, and then I take one of their hands with my other hand and grab it and put it right on the item that I want. And I say, choo-choo, choo-choo, here it is. It's the choo-choo. And we might play with it a minute and then practice the whole thing again where I've got two items there. I'm asking, you know, where's choo-choo, where's choo-choo? And, again, help them learn how to respond to that kind of question. You want to add anything about that, Kate?
Can you hear me all right?
I sure can.
Okay.
You were hoping I'd say no.
No, I don't know if it's the weather thing. What can I add to that? I guess I don't really have much to contribute except to say that it's surprisingly more common than I would expect. And a lot of times even that, you know, it's like, well, if it's his favorite toy, surely, but maybe his favorite toy, but he may not be linking the language with it. So.
Right, and that happens all the time with kids with receptive language problems. And again, let me just say how wise you were to comment at the beginning of the show when you said even if they're saying it, it doesn't necessarily mean that they process it when you ask, you know, where's the something he's just said. You know, maybe you've just been playing with blocks and he's imitated blocks two or three or four times, and then you turn around and say, where's the block? And you can't reach down and get it. You know, that tells you that you've got a big receptive language problem there. This happens with me all the time, too, even with children that are higher functioning than this, say between, you know, the two-year-old level, two-and-a-half-year-old level. You might be able to say to them, what does a cow say? And they know that a cow says moo, but you turn it around and ask the question, which one says moo? And it is so surprising how many children can't do that when they certainly pop out moo when you're asking that. Have you noticed that, Kate, with the kids that you see?
A lot. And, again, I think it's they kind of learn it in one certain way, and it's kind of canned or robotic. You know, it's like,
right.
The cow says moo.
Yeah.
You said moo?
Yeah, that's hard. And so that's something that I do with lots of the children that I see is make sure that we're asking questions in lots of different ways. And that's something that I really try to help parents learn how to understand. And I remember thinking about that a lot as a newer therapist and really thinking, okay, I've only taught this in this one context. No wonder he doesn't know it right now. You know, this is a kid who needs lots of opportunities and lots of and, again, I think our literature, our educational stuff would say teaching across different contexts, meaning, you know, you don't just call your shoes or his shoes shoes. You need to talk about mommy and daddy's shoes. You need to point out shoes on the baby doll. You need to point out shoes on a television commercial. You point out shoes when you're walking through Payless. You point out shoes when you're looking through the catalog. You know, those, some kids really do need that pretty focused teaching, and I'm going to try to quit saying that because last week you pointed out how people might not understand that term that I'm using.
Yeah, what could we say? Increased emphasis, or are you there?
Okay, now I think I'm back. Kate, are you back? Hello?
Hello?
Are you there?
I hear you.
Okay, I think Blog Talk Radio is having some problems because I got kicked off right after that.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, but I think we totally lost air. We both got kicked off a second ago. So I think I realized that you were gone, and then I was gone like 3 seconds after that. So we certainly apologize for that. Things are happening that are beyond our control. Let's just pick back up. We were talking about children who learn things in one context and then have a lot of difficulty generalizing that to other situations. And so you want to be mindful of that as a parent or as a therapist, that you're not just teaching one specific name or one specific context for something. You want to, again, help those kids learn to generalize those concepts and words and apply that to lots of different situations so that it's not just context specific. All right, we've talked about all of the kinds of questions that kind of come in early, looking to answer a where's question when you ask, you know, where's mommy, choosing an object from a choice between two familiar items. We've talked about pointing to pictures, or even that would be like pointing to body parts when you say, where are your eyes? You know, that a child wouldn't necessarily answer, my eyes are right here on my face, but he might take his little finger and point to his eyes. The next kinds of things would be using verbal responses. And again, the chart that I'm looking at has this skill emerging between the ages of 1 and 2 years. And I think it emerges at about certainly by 18 months. When you ask, what's this, about a familiar object or a picture, such as a cookie or a baby or a car, that a child would be able to tell you the word. And again, that's a skill that's at about the 18-month level. And certainly, we see that with typically developing children, maybe even before then. So if you have a 2-year-old or a 2.5-year-old who's not able to do that, you want to keep pumping that vocabulary in, because they certainly should be able to start to answer the what's this or what's that question pretty early on after they've learned to do the other kinds of questions that we've talked about. Okay, the next one is something that we talk about all the time, is answering yes-no questions. And on my particular language test that I use, understanding yes-no questions is not listed until a child is 30 months old or, you know, 2.5. But certainly with children who are not struggling with language, that skill comes in a lot earlier. And the other chart that I'm using tonight, it's from It's from Linguist Systems Guide to Communication Milestones. And it is listed by 24 months that a child would answer yes and no questions with a head nod or a shake. And that certainly would apply to those early things like, you know, do you want spaghetti? You know, and him or her shake their heads, yes or no. And you have to be really careful when you're doing this, too, to make sure that they understand the content word and that it's not just that they aren't responding to questions, they may not know what spaghetti is. So you have to really kind of tease out, are you using a question that's too hard, or is it just that he doesn't know how to respond to questions? And sometimes that's hard. I think it's hard for parents. I'm not going to use this example, but I have one doctor dad right now that's horribly inappropriate with the kinds of questions that he might ask, you know, his child, just to kind of be funny about that. And so you want to be sure that you're using words so they can really answer and respond to. Are you still there, Kate?
I am.
Okay.
I was just listening. I will add this, backing you up just a little bit on the what's this question.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot of kids who they've heard that so many times that their response is invariably, this, what's this, this, you know.
Yeah. That's a receptive language problem right there.
Yeah. What's the, no, not this. This, you know. Oh, so I tend to do more of get the blank or where's the blank, so that they're more likely, if they're going to pop out the word, you know, where's the dog? Dog. I'd rather hear the word than this.
Yeah.
Just saying that, it kind of gets to the same idea. Do they understand what it means? But I've had so many kids that really got stuck on this, 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 this. And I think it is, what's this? What's this? So,
you know, and kids that have these receptive language problems do really, really love those non-specific words that mean lots of different things. Dis and dat for
yeah.
this and that.
That's from what's that?
That.
Yeah. That.
You know, they say that all the time. And, you know, it is kids, it's that kind of kid with a receptive language problem that gets pretty early, oh, if I just say this, that, or that one, you know, that means lots of different things. So I see that pretty regularly, too, is that a child will really kind of overuse those non-specific things because their vocabularies aren't developed enough, again, kind of from an expressive language perspective. And a lot of times it's just that they don't really know the word. They don't understand it either, but they've learned that those kinds of general words will carry them through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was a good point about that. All right, let's move on to the kinds of questions that children understand between 24 months and 3 years. And I think these questions are all, on my other test, more at the 2.5 to 3 year level. And again, these are the kinds of questions where you start to really see the breakdown, where
Absolutely.
Children start to really struggle. Yeah. So one would be points to objects when described. And I talked about this a second ago with my new little friend that I have. You know, what do you wear on your head? And he would be able to reach down and get the baby's hat, or point to the picture in the book, or show you in some other way that it's a hat. And that, again, is so hard for lots of kids to do. You might be able to say to that same child, where's the hat? And he points right to it or gets the hat right away, but then to make it just a little bit more difficult. And again, sometimes I have to really point that out to parents, that they're not kind of making that next step, that that's a harder skill and that that's kind of the next level. I think sometimes therapists have a hard time understanding that too, and that's where therapists give kids, they might overestimate a child's receptive language skills and kind of give them the benefit of the doubt on that unless they're really teasing out those specific skills.
Right, and that's an easy one to miss, but it's interesting when you're with typically developing kids or kids who may be apraxic, and Laura will be talking about that in a month or so, or a couple of weeks. But anyway, that just in my thinking, what I mean is if a child's receptive skills are age-appropriate, they get those pretty immediately. But when there
yeah.
is a receptive problem, when you just bump it up that little bit, which doesn't seem like a huge thing, they're lost.
Yeah.
Even kids who might, like if you had a hat in front of you and you said, where's the hat, or get the hat, and they did, they might stick it on their head. So you think, oh,
yeah,
he knows that hat goes on his head. But
right,
then you said, which one do you wear on your head?
Mm. No clue. Yeah, and I've seen that happen with therapists when I've really, you know, I've gone in and maybe I'm on a team and another developmental interventionist, not you, of course, Kate, but somebody else will be on a team. You're not going to miss those things. But they might say, understands object functions. You know, and I sit there thinking, no, they don't. And then I kind of, you know, feel compelled to kind of talk about that a little bit, or certainly point that out. Well, there's a big difference between doing it in the context that you're talking about and how this probably is listed on the test. And again, that's why I think sometimes even with folks who do what we call in our area, the primary level evaluations, the first evaluators, they really, some of them in our system are quite good and are really great at identifying all kinds of deficits that children have, but some of them really do overestimate a child's cognitive skills or receptive language skills. And, you know, really have them, you know, you read the report and it looks like they're just a late talker. And then we get there and think, oh, boy, there's a lot more going on than just an expressive language problem here. I think you see that all the time, Kate. Your favorite thing is where somebody says their cognitive skills are age appropriate, but then their receptive language skills are way delayed.
Right. And to me, that's kind of an impossible situation. But apparently I'm not always right on that, but according to some folks, yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, well, if he doesn't understand what a child his age is supposed to understand, isn't that partly cognitive function? And parents don't like that.
they don't like it, but it's the truth.
It's true. Yeah. And I get that it's more painful to take than he's just a late talker. On the other hand, what I usually say to parents, to simplify it, is to kind of say, he looks to understand what you do with things, but he doesn't get the language behind it. And I see that a lot when I'm playing with kids or when I'm evaluating kids, because I can get the brush and I have the baby doll out and I hand the little girl the brush and she automatically brushes the baby's hair. But if I have three objects in front of us and I say, brush the baby's hair, get the brush the baby's hair, she doesn't do it.
Right.
So, you know, to me that says, well, on one level she understands the function of that object. On the other hand, does she understand the language behind it? And we are kind of a language-based people, you know. I mean, if you don't get the word, you may know.
Well,
what?
Go ahead. I've got a thought. Go ahead, but I can hold it. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, you know, even if a child does get the concept, the idea, basically, if somebody is saying something to them and they don't understand it, eventually, it doesn't really matter if they get the idea. That sounds kind of, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? They have to.
I totally know what you're saying. Yeah, they have to be able to understand the language that goes with it. It's more that than that. And, you know, think about school. School is language-based. Rarely beyond preschool do we not have situations where teachers, you know, in preschool, in the really great preschools, teachers are really, you know, telling, showing, and helping. They're helping you get through it. Even in some of the not-so-great daycares and stuff, by two, they're not even into showing and helping anymore. They just tell you what to do, and they expect you to do it. And academically, that's how children are taught. You know, the teacher stands up, gives instructions, tells you what to do, tells you new knowledge, you know, whatever concept you're working on. Whether it be a science concept or a math concept, you know, even if it doesn't really have to do with quote-unquote words or language per se, they expect you to get it from the whole telling piece. And so kids who are struggling by two to understand language, I just look at them and think, gosh, you've got a long row to hoe, so to speak, because everything is language-based for the whole rest of your life learning. You know, and some of those kids who do go on to have some visual strengths and, you know, somehow are given kind of that gift that they can read, most of the time they're not, most of the time those children still continue to struggle with language because, and I've heard people explain it this way, if you have an expressive language problem, you're probably going to have difficulty with writing. And if you have a receptive language problem, you're probably going to have some reading comprehension problems. You know, and again, when you have a child that's behind it too, I don't always reassure parents that this is something that he's going to completely outgrow or completely not ever struggle with because, one, we don't know. We don't know. We don't have a crystal ball at two to say that. And then I just feel like if you're behind the eight ball already with understanding language and you're not even two yet, chances are you're going to struggle with that for a while. And I don't mean to sound gloomy and pessimistic, but receptive language problems are a big deal. And again, language so permeates all of your life and even your academic life. And so you do want to take these issues pretty seriously and do everything you can to help those kids keep pace.
And I think for reasons we've gone over many times with the, even tonight, where you're talking about the little child who was having a fall-down fit because he wanted the cookie right then. So often those kids, unfortunately, do kind of get pigeonholed into, oh, he's just bad. Oh, he's a troublemaker. Oh, he doesn't listen. You know, he's the class clown, whatever. And, you know, instead of somebody addressing, no, we have a problem here, this is probably the reason for that behavior, they kind of get. And if that's who you are in four-year-old preschool and in first and third grade, you know, I just think, ooh, it would be hard to rebound from that when your very foundation of education is so negative.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times it is boys, and a lot of times the teachers are women, and I think boys struggle a little more naturally just because they're busier, you know, and they're made to sit for so long. And then to be
Our whole system doesn't play to that very well, but go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, it's kind of designed by women for girls, you know. And I'm the mother of two girls, so I guess I got lucky there. But, you know, I think boys in general have a little bit more difficulty attending and doing what they're supposed to do. And then if they have a receptive language problem, and haven't you seen kids, Laura's the mother of two boys, maybe you've experienced it, but some teachers just don't like some kids in their classes, you know, and they don't hide it. And I think, oh, that poor boy or that poor girl, as the case may be. But
yeah, that would be my oldest son's whole MO. You loved him or you hated him. You know, teachers, I kind of knew by the first few weeks of school how that year was going to go, because he was an active kid with a learning disability. You know, Jonathan had struggled with a reading disability his whole academic career, but he's doing great now. But, you know, really, unless teachers just kind of got him, it was really negative kind of from the get-go. And that happens with lots of our kids with language delays too, especially when a kid, when they don't know, you know, and they do just kind of go to, oh, he's a hyper kid, or, you know, again, he's bad, he doesn't listen, his, you know, and sometimes it is kind of blamed on those things when really there's an underlying language problem. And I so kind of stress this to parents, not to be negative, but to just say, this is serious, you can't just blow this off and think this is going to get better on its own, because they usually don't. Receptive language problems do not fix themselves overnight. Sometimes you will, you know, somebody will tell you a strange story in the grocery store. Oh, my cousin didn't talk till he was five and he's just fine now. Or something like that, you know, that there's this miraculous recovery from an expressive language problem. You really don't hear people saying that about receptive language things, do you?
No.
You know, he didn't understand anything, or, you know, we thought he was, I don't know, I can't even probably say it in language that people will understand or not think that I'm being rude or condescending or unprofessional. But, you know, you really don't hear about that where people think, oh, he didn't understand anything, or he didn't get it, or he's not very smart, and then all of a sudden he's doing great, you know. So, again, receptive language problems are a big, big deal. And you need to pay more attention to that than even the expressive language part, because you want to make sure that they have that good foundation. Okay, we're going to have to go really, really fast
to get through the rest
of this stuff tonight. Okay, the other kinds of questions that you want to, that kids need to learn how to answer by three or understand by three, would be answering simple WH questions logically. Again, you know, where's mommy? And they would understand to say work or the store or in the potty, you know, understand kind of how to answer a where's question. That would be the same thing for where's the doggy, you know, outside. Where are your shoes? Again, maybe going and getting them in the other room, or when they have some words, you know, in my room. So being able to answer those logical questions. Answering critical thinking questions. And again, this is where I really see a breakdown, and even sometimes with kids that I think are doing great, and I'm thinking, I'm going to discharge them. He's going to be age appropriate by the time he's three, and get so excited about a kid like that. And then I start to really make things a little harder, like, what do you do when you're hungry? No clue. You know, that, because eating, they haven't really learned that hungry, you know, is that physical state word that's associated with eating, and that is so complex to try to teach those kinds of things. And there's a whole section in my DVD, Teach Me to Listen and Obey 2, about answering those logical questions or making inferences, understanding those kinds of things. And, you know, sometimes with kids you just have to work on it and work on it and work on it and teach those meanings. And, you know, as a parent, you're going to want to teach those kinds of things all day. You know, so you might say, it's cold outside today. What do you wear when it's cold outside? And then you're going to want to say, here's your coat. You put that on because it's cold. We wear coats when we are cold. And you're going to want to say it over and over and over. And you do that all day long with those explanations and those, the why part. And some parents really get so frustrated with their kids when they start the whole why, 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 why. But I love it. I love to hear that because I think, gosh, they're starting to develop that higher level reasoning and really wanting to know that more complex thinking, and they do that with that question with the why. It is irritating, but again, I love it. I love to hear it. Okay, so answering those critical thinking questions, let's see, the ones that I always do, what do you do when you're cold? What do you do when you're sleepy? What do you do when you're hungry? What do you do when you're dirty? Those kinds of things. And again, don't miss opportunities to teach those kinds of things throughout the day. Kate, can you think of more examples of those? I mean, I know that you always do the baby's crying. Oh, the baby fell down. Wah. What should we do? Those kinds of little routines. Can you think of any of those other ones?
I'm trying to think if I do anything other. Those are my standards. Hungry, thirsty, tired. I guess that's probably, those are the main ones. And I have to say,
those are the main ones I do, yeah.
I have a lot of kids not get there by the
Yeah, by three. It's hard.
Yeah. And I work that in, you know, with baby play the most probably because it kind of lends itself to that. But long before I'm asking them, what do we do when the baby's hungry? I kind of pretend to be the baby and I'm saying, hungry, I'm hungry. I want to eat. I'm hungry. So that they're associating, you know, making that link. Long before I'd say, uh-oh, baby's hungry, what do we need to do?
Right, and so you're teaching it in the context of play over and over and over before you're going to turn around and test it. I do it with babies. You know, I do it a lot with farm animals, and I play zoo animals a lot because as a speech therapist, you know, I'm listening for those long words and those hard sounds. And so when I have a kid that's really moving along pretty well, and I have a fair amount of those, you know, we do a lot of zoo animals because it's kids with those speech problems and expressive language problems, you know, they might have mastered cow and bear and dog, but when I start bringing out elephant, giraffe, zebra.
Rhinoceros. Well, let me tell you, I never do rhinoceros or zebra or... I'm so happy when I get cow, horse, pig, I'm ready to hang it up right there.
Yeah. But,
yes!
You know, by the nature of what you do, you see kids with more cognitive issues than I probably do. Because I get a fair amount of kids that, you know, receptive language is super and we're just, or I, you know, it's pretty good. And so, or we all think it's pretty good until we start doing this really hard stuff. So I really play with that. Or even with my kids that aren't having receptive language issues per se, when they start to really play by 2.5, I'm really working those concepts in and really making sure that we don't end up with a kid who looks pretty good receptively, but that we miss these higher-level things because we're so focused on other issues. That's what I do, too, when a kid's having an off day. Maybe a kid's a little bit sick and mom should have called me and canceled the session and didn't. And so, you know, I might work on some of those receptive language things, or like on a day with an apraxic kid who has just about had it and is about to just crawl out of his skin and cannot, you know, tell me anymore, you know, that's when I might break out some of that receptive language stuff and really work on these higher level things and make sure that we're covering all our bases and that those little kids that I think are just expressive language kids or speech kids, that we're also making sure that they understand this higher level stuff.
Sometimes it is easy to assume they do and then go, oh, maybe not.
Oh, no, we missed it. Yeah, or a mom, or I might have a mom that really is talking about how well a kid is doing and he thinks he understands everything in conversation. And so I might be a little bit sneaky and say, all right, let me show you something right here. You know, or this is the next thing I want us to work on, you know, and really let a mom see a kid struggle a little bit and say, okay, typically kids who aren't struggling and whose language is moving along really don't have trouble with this. So this is why this is important, and this is what I need you to really work on and help me with this. And yeah, this is our next step. We're never going to be kind of satisfied with where he is. We're never going to leave him there for long. We're always looking at that next little level of skills that a kid needs to get. And I think that's so frustrating for parents sometimes because, you know, they just want a break or just want to go, whew, we made it. And then, you know, I'm always right there going, yay, okay, now, you know, let's move on. Let's look at what the next thing is. And this happens a lot with parents that just think their kids are late talkers. Mm-hmm. You know, they really do understand lots of basic stuff, but when you challenge them just a little bit, and again, I don't like to do it to kind of deflate a mom or, you know, make them feel like, oh, no, she's just being so negative all the time. But I do want them always mindful that, you know, typically developing kids who don't have language problems are adding new stuff every day. And so our little language delay guys have to go double time to kind of keep pace with that. And this happens a lot, I think, with kids that I do just look at that are like intelligibility kids or expressive language kids. We don't do enough to kind of support that receptive language development. We're so hyper-focused on the other end that we end up with some of these little holes and these little pockets of things that they don't know because we were so dedicated to making sure that the expressive piece is in place that we kind of forgot about that other stuff. But in truly typically developing language, kids just kind of get this. You don't even really have to teach it. And that's what's so surprising to people who work with kids with language delays all the time. You go into a classroom of typically developing kids, and boy, they all look like they're going to Harvard, don't they? They all look like they're geniuses, you know, and that's not true. They're normal. They're typically developing, but because we've let our whole point of view get so skewed that we don't realize how much a two-year-old without language delays, we don't realize how much they know. And then, you know, you're listening at the daycare and you're hearing a kid talk a blue streak and you ask a question, you know, and they are just popping out those answers or, you know, just so know what's going on. All right, we have a caller and I didn't even realize it. Let me get him on. Hi there, caller. Are you there? Hello? Caller?
Hello?
Oh. Are you there?
Hello, are you talking to me?
I am. Welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm sorry, I didn't know you were on. I'm so sorry.
You know, it said that if I wanted to talk, I had to press a 1, and I hadn't pressed the 1 yet because I was trying to figure out what you were talking about because I basically just walked in the house about 10 minutes ago, and I knew you guys were on, so I didn't know what you guys were talking about just yet, so I wanted to kind of catch up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's
we didn't know.
It's okay.
Well, do you feel like you're caught up?
Yes, I've caught up now.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have a question for us?
Yes, my name is Lisa, and I've got two daughters. My youngest one has got an expressive delay and receptive delay. And
how old is she?
She's 2.5 now. She's
okay.
2.5. And I've been listening to your podcast over the last couple of weeks, especially, you know, you guys are talking about the receptive delay.
Right.
And I want to tell you how useful and helpful you guys have been for me.
Aww.
And especially the website,
you.
Too. And the DVDs.
Thank you.
I've got the DVDs, too. So those have really helped me and my daughter out. And we're taking little steps every day. And as a matter of fact, because of your DVDs, I did look for a new speech therapist for my daughter because I felt like my first one.
Laura, maybe you can do those by Skyping or something. Maybe you can do, where do you live, caller?
No, I'm not telling my name. Anyway, because I didn't feel like she was concentrating on my daughter's receptive delay issues.
Mm-hmm.
And you are the smartest mom I've talked to all day, Lisa, because that is the biggest thing. If kids don't understand language,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to be able to use it. They're
That's
not going to be
true.
Able to
and,
say
and
it.
And now that I've, I guess I would say for the last month and a half, I haven't been doing anything that the first speech therapist told me to do. We've just been doing what this new one has told me to do. And she really, I was very impressed the first time I talked to her, and I really got lucky because she was the first one I started looking for after the first one. And she told me that we needed to concentrate on my daughter's receptive language before I can expect her to start talking, you know, saying any other words.
Well, that is great, and she sounds like a keeper. So I'm so glad that you found a good. I'm so glad that you found a good match for her. Now, listen, do you have all the DVDs, Lisa?
Yes.
Do you have all? You do? Okay. I was going to try to give you one. I was just going to send you one if you hadn't bought them already. You're going to have to send me your email so the next one that comes out, I'm just going to have to send it to you for free.
Okay.
I hope it would apply. But thanks so much for calling in.
Can I ask a couple quick questions?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. I wondered, how old was your daughter when she started getting therapy?
She was two.
Two.
So she's
and
been going
at that
for
point,
about 6 months.
I'm sorry, what?
She's been going for about 6 months now.
6 months.
Okay.
When she very first started, were you aware that there were receptive problems, or were you?
I did not know. I just thought she.
Late talker.
Yeah, she just didn't talk.
Uh huh.
I didn't realize that she had to learn. She had to understand the words first before she can.
You just kind of assumed she probably did understand them.
Yes, I
right.
did.
And I wonder.
Now, did your older daughter have problems too, Lisa, or no?
She did speak a little later than most kids. I would say she started speaking maybe around 2.5.
Uh-huh.
But there was no problem with her understanding. You know, I would ask her something, you know, go get this, bring me this toy. And she would go, you know, look for it around the house and bring it to me. And if we ever went out, I would tell her, you know, look at that, what's that? And she would try to say the words, but she wasn't saying it clearly. So I wasn't really
right.
concerned about her because she was making the effort to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, but your second daughter, it was kind of a surprise when you found out that she had the receptive language problems too because of your experience with your older daughter.
Right. And I thought, well,
yeah.
I must have been doing something wrong. And that was the first
right.
thing that came to mind. But I didn't know what.
Well, and it's probably not that you did anything wrong, and I hope your new speech therapist has told you that. It's just probably the way she's wired, so to speak.
Yeah.
She just
that's
has more difficulties.
That's what my new speech therapist told me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
hey,
I'm glad as a listener that Laura inspired you through her DVDs and website, and you've moved on. And, you know, not that we want anybody to be fired, but it's fortunate that you saw fit to move on and get somebody who sounds like she's really good and now you're on the right track. So
right. Now, well, I do great. Have a question.
Okay. Go ahead.
Because my daughter has the receptive disorder, I guess that's what you call it, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay. Should I even bother trying to potty train her? Because she'll sit on the potty happily for a few minutes looking through a book. And should I even concentrate on that, or should I just concentrate on trying to get her to understand more words? Or what?
I would worry about the language, Lisa, because
okay.
I think it's a big deal to have to focus on so many things at one time. And
mm-hmm.
so from my perspective, you know, being that I do language all day, every day, it's what I sleep, breathe, eat, everything. You know, language is going to be it needs to be your focus right now.
Okay.
And so I think potty training, when you wait until a kid is ready, is so much easier than trying for months and months and months, especially with a receptive language delay, because they have to really put a lot of those ideas together. You know, I have to feel like I'm going to have to go, then I have to be able to tell mom or run, go do it myself, and I have to be able to get my clothes down and up. You know, there's lots that goes into potty training other than just, you know, being able to say pee and poop. You know, there are lots of other kinds of skills that have to come in with that. Kate, are you on the same page with that?
Yes, I would agree.
Potty training.
My
yeah.
guess is she probably isn't ready, but, you know, not having seen her, it's pretty hard to say, but I think the experts on potty training say, well, they have to be aware that they're wet or poopy and somehow indicate that. Does she do that?
No, but I noticed she goes off to a corner when she has to do like
mm-hmm.
number two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice when they hide, I think.
So there is starting, she is starting to have some kind
awareness.
Of,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and that would be the beginning. And I would think that you're going to still want to talk about it with her, you know, and you've got that older daughter there to really kind of model going to the bathroom, but you're probably going to still want to do that for a while before you do the added pressure of potty training her.
Okay.
And, again, I think it's just too much pressure for some kids with receptive language delays. And I'm mostly with the kids that I see, okay. and, Kate, you may be able to talk about this too, I hardly have anybody with a receptive and expressive language delay that's potty trained before three. I think most of the time that happens, you know, between 3 and 4, that potty training piece kind of comes on in at that age. I know lots of mothers hate for me to say that. Grandmothers want to kill me when I'm at the house, and they're trying to say, but he's not even potty training, he's 2 and a half. And I say, guess what, that can wait. He's not even ready. You know, what are you going to do? You can't make him. You can't make him do it. You can't make him get in there and go when you need him to go. And so I always tell parents, wait on that until you're getting lots of the readiness signs that, you know, they're going to be able cognitively and physically and language-wise to do it at that point.
Okay. That's what I thought would be the answer, because I think the hardest thing to accept is that my younger daughter is delayed speech-wise,
yeah.
And I have to put off these other things like the potty training and the group activities and all that.
Yeah.
Because my older daughter, she was potty trained, gosh, when she was like 26 months.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
By the time she was 2 and a half, she was in preschool or nursery school. That's what they call it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, language affects so many more things, Lisa, than just being able to talk. You know, I mean, it affects how she understands, it affects how she relates to people, and it even affects those other little developmental things, too, like potty training. And so I think you should just keep focusing on the language, keep helping her learn to understand words, help her learn to follow routines. And when she gets to the point, you know, it's not going to be when she's 16 or anything. You know, it's going to be before she goes, you know, to school. So just kind of hang in there, because the other thing, I think when you push too hard, you really can sacrifice lots of other things. You know,
yeah,
sometimes
so that's what I noticed with the other speech therapist. I think she was pushing my youngest daughter too hard. She was expecting too many things from her, and she just couldn't do it. She would just
Well, and if she was focused, yeah, and if she was too focused on expressive language or having her say something she didn't understand, that is too much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got to build the foundation for that. And if you think about potty training kind of in the same way, you know, you wouldn't expect her right now to be able to tie her shoes. You wouldn't expect her right now to be able to go out and run hurdles, you know, jump hurdles, drive a car. You know, and so if you think about all those kinds of things, like potty training is kind of rungs on a ladder. You know, when she gets there, she'll be able to do it, and it won't be hard for her or for you. But if you push too soon, you're asking her to skip steps, and, you know, that's not fair.
And you said she'd sit on the potty. Does she ever do anything on the potty?
Yes, she has peed. I don't know if I should say that.
You can say that.
Oh, yeah, we don't care about that.
She has done number one a couple times.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Do you think it was a surprise when she did it?
Yes, the first couple of times. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I would think just wait a little bit. Save yourself some grief. Focus on some other things first, and she'll get there.
Okay.
You know what I did with my girls early on, and they were typically developing and were potty trained pretty early, but I had the little potty chair, which was not nearly as cool as the ones I have now, but in the bathroom, and when I would run the bath water every night, I would make sure to sit them on there, and it just seemed like that water running, really, and then they were very consistent on that before I moved to potty training.
Okay, I'll try
too. Just a thought.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
That's great. Well,
thank you so much for calling, Lisa.
Well, thanks for your help.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Have to email you with her email so you can pay her back.
I know.
Not pay her back. It sounded like a paid caller. Sounded like advertising for your DVDs and website. But
that was very nice. And I am glad that she was able to recognize, okay, the therapy we're getting is not meeting my daughter's needs, and I need to make a change. And that's so hard for so many parents to do.
And
it really, really is.
Pointed out as we've gone through these receptive language topics, fair number of therapists do kind of miss it. You know,
yeah.
It's surprising.
Yeah.
I just think they kind of get pulled along. Even speech therapists, I'm talking, not just developmental interventionists, but speech therapists, they get kind of pulled into the say it, say it, say it. And we do work on say it. There's no doubt about that. But they do kind of overlook the what does she really understand. Part
right.
of the whole picture. So, yeah, it took her a little while to put two and two together, but I think your DVDs did a lot to help her.
Oh, and I'm so glad.
I know. That was sweet.
That's so nice. I'm so glad to hear that. That was very sweet. Okay. Well, we didn't get through nearly the information that I thought we would tonight.
Are you surprised?
So, no, I don't know why. I always set us up for this. But anyway, so next time, which is not going to be next week, because next week on April 30th is Kate's birthday.
My 39th. Okay, maybe not quite that, yeah.
Okay, you're a teeny bit beyond that.
It's the age there. I really don't even care to celebrate them, but Lauren says I need my birthday off. Actually, my sister and brother-in-law are coming to town that night for the Derby in Oaks, so I will be
cool.
Probably madly changing sheets and cleaning bathrooms and
we won't be doing this show. So we'll see, we'll talk about this again in 2 weeks. We're going to hopefully finish up asking and answering questions. We don't have too many more to do on that. Then we're going to go back and talk about just the few other little things that are the receptive language skills that I didn't talk about that come in between 2.5 and 3. We talked a little bit about object functions tonight, but learning how to label or put objects in categories. I'm going to give some ideas about some processing games you can play, and this would be for older twos and certainly 3- and 4-year-olds who are having difficulty understanding and processing language. We're going to talk about how to teach negation, which it's kind of fun to teach. And then we're going to talk about understanding other kinds of concepts such as quantity. So those are the other big receptive skills that come in before a child is 3. And so hopefully that first Thursday in May, I'm not even sure what that date is. I guess it would be the 6th or 7th. We're going to finish up all this receptive language stuff. Then I'm so excited about the couple shows we're going to do after that, because we're going to talk about how to pick good preschool and daycare programs for your children with language delays. And so we're going to talk about the characteristics. And, of course, with Kate and me, we're going to talk about all the bad stuff we see as well as what you want to look forward
there
to.
There will be a little soapboxing that night, no doubt about it. Hard not
so
to.
Listen for that in May. That's an exciting thing coming up. And then after that, we're probably going to talk about apraxia. So if you have a child that's been diagnosed with apraxia or suspect apraxia, that's kind of a preview. Hopefully those last couple weeks in May, we're going to get started talking about that. And that's one of my favorite things to treat and to talk about, so I can't wait till we get there. So that's just a little preview, but thanks for listening tonight and for a great show, and we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks. Bye.
Bye.